Hi, I'm Ernie Hudson, and you're listening to the McSauce Podcast.
Welcome to episode 354 of the McSauce Podcast. My name is Paul McGinty. With me, as always, are Ian Sharpley.
Hello.
And Matt Cassell.
Hi.
It is Monday night, January 4th, and we welcome you to 2021. We made it through arguably a pretty rough year last year, and here we
arguably.
Are.
Arguably. So, you know...
It wasn't that bad.
That bad. Some might say it was bad. Some say it was good.
You can tell.
Yeah, it's very debatable.
We're very even-handed. On one hand, some people are saying it was the worst year that everybody's ever experienced. On the other hand, people are like, meh.
Hey, some of those 2020 fans are good guys.
If you're out there in the audience, was this the worst year of your life or not? Hit us up on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube.
Well, hold on. Before we get too into the episode, Paul, was 2020 the worst year of your life?
No, definitely not.
Ian?
It was bad, man. It was bad. The pandemic put a lot of stress on me mentally and physically. I got very sick at the end of the year. I'm still
bronchitis.
Sick.
Bronchitis, not
pneumonia.
COVID.
Yeah, I'm still very sick. Work was very difficult. So it was bad. I don't know. I think I've had maybe a worse year of my life, but this is definitely out there. Top three.
That's solid. 2020, you're coming in.
2004, I hurt my back really, really bad. So that year was probably
the
bad.
The world's dying of COVID, but Ian's like, I hurt my back. I have a hangnail. Worst year ever.
You got me. How about for you, Matt, smarty pants asshole?
Not even close. Not even close.
This was the worst year?
No. I think we know the year that was bad for Matt.
Yeah, that was traumatic.
Nobody ever had that bad of a year in life.
What year was that?
2000, the year we started this podcast.
13?
13.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the worst year, the year that we started this podcast. You know what? You're right, Matt. You were cursed with
us. It was the worst year for not only myself, but our fans, too.
I think that, on a global scale, 2020 is like,
it's arguably bad.
Slam dunk.
Oh, now it's hands
slam
down.
Slam dunk for badness. Overall, like I think I had a pretty decent year. I kind of enjoyed a lot of aspects of this year. I had the best tan of my life this year.
Who keeps track of stuff?
The best tan of my life? Is that what you said?
Yeah, I think.
Are
I
you
think
Larry
the
David?
Years, I think the years were, they were 93, 2001, and 2020.
10 years?
Best tans of my life those years, yeah. But
so
we're
you
not
haven't,
here.
You haven't had a tan that great since 2001.
Was there
years.
A point in the summer where you're like, God damn, this is a good tan year?
Jesus Christ, this is 2001 circa.
I was barely at the end of June, and I was like, oh my God, this might be the year.
You're looking like reporters were like, if he keeps up at this pace, it's going to be no. We don't want to get too far ahead. We don't want to say that this is going to be the best tan year.
Yeah. This
I
was
the best
this was
tan
the one.
Of my life. What
well,
the
Matt,
fucking
I'm,
maniac?
I'm fucking Irish and I live in Pittsburgh. It's not easy to get a tan. It's not like I'm selling surfboards out on the beach all fucking week.
All right. Okay.
It's not easy to do. You're fucking Italian, and you're half black. You guys don't understand the struggle.
We're tan privileged.
I hate you guys. But we're not here to talk about tans. We're here to talk about other positive things. We're going to talk about the highlights of 2020, because coming out of 2020, what a miserable year. But we're here to project positivity back into the universe, and we're here to talk about some of our favorite things from this year, be they TV shows, movies, books, tans. But another positive that I had this year, that I have every year, is housekeeping with Ian Sharpley.
If you go to McSauce.com, you can go and if you click on the tanometer, you can see a full archive listing of Paul's best tan years with photographic evidence. So go to McSauce.com. If you want to respond to the debate about if 2001 was better than 09, I know some people are big 09 people. Go on Twitter, go on Instagram. Let us know what the best tan year you think that Paul had was. You can also go to the Patreon, and there you can vote on this upcoming year's tan if you want to see him use different kind of products to maybe bring out some of the melanin in his skin. You can put down $5, and you can request any kind of tanning product that you like there.
I found a great bronzing sunscreen. That has been, I think it's really been doing wonders.
Can you tell the people at home what it is, or?
Not off the top of my head.
Oh, okay, I see. But if you put down
don't want to give up my trade secrets.
Right, if you put down your $5, we're going to have a downloadable PDF where you can see all of Paul's tanning preparation kit. You can see before and after shots. So go to our Patreon, type in MCSOSS. /tan and you can get all of the deep cut behind the scenes stuff that I know all of you have been waiting for.
So Matt, why don't we start with you? Why don't you tell us one thing that you loved about 2020?
Well, because we were all hunkered down, what did they call it?
Shelter
in place. We're all sheltering in place, particularly...
Can you shelter on the move? Like,
if you take the shelter with you.
Couldn't they just say shelter? Just shelter,
but in place.
If you have an RV, like, that is sheltering on the move.
On the move, yeah. Right? I know some people that were sheltering. My in-laws shelter on the move. So, and I all shelter right. in place. I don't like to go
so, home. So were we societally saying that sheltering in an RV is unacceptable.
Socially unacceptable. Outcasts.
Okay. So shelter in place, you RV lovers out there.
You know who you are.
They're our biggest fans. They listen to us when they're traveling.
One of them is a Patreon subscriber. So he'll be sheltering on the move, and he'll get that downloadable tanning extra content.
Well, because we were kind of forced to stream a lot of our entertainment this year, I decided to sign up for some new streaming services, and one of them ended up being Shudder. It's my newest love affair, and it's been pretty consistent this entire year. I have absolutely loved Shudder. I feel like it's outside of the $20 popcorn popper that I bought probably back in February. It's an air popper. It's very good, actually. It goes along with Shudder because Friday night is Shudder night, as you know, at the Casale House.
And Joe Bob, Skippy Briggs, or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah. If he's around, if he's doing a show, if not, then it's up to me to find my own content on Glorious Shudder. I would say about 85% of the time, Friday night content does come from Shudder, Paul, but sometimes I will deviate. I'll find something else. Usually it is of the horror movie nature. Paul, like you, I watched a lot of horror this year, but Shudder has been a revelation. Outside of that $20 air popper, it's the best money I spent this year.
Yeah, you've talked a lot of Shudder talk, and
yeah.
I think I may have to sign up.
It's cheap.
Give it a go.
It's cheap.
How cheap is it?
Like $50 for the year.
That's it? Yeah.
Something like that, yeah. I think there was a deal when I did it, but yeah, it was are you looking it up, Ian?
I am not.
Okay. I'm sorry, I thought you were. Yeah, it's cheap. It's certainly affordable. I know you can fit it within your budget, Paul. I have, as you know, sometimes I get buyer's remorse. Ian, sometimes I'll buy something and then a minute later I'm like, why the fuck did I buy that? Why didn't you stop me? I haven't felt for even a second like, oh man, I really, really wasted my money on that one.
Yeah, I do think that you really got a lot of your money's worth out of this. I mean, horror is your main go-to.
It's my main go-to.
And it seems like for what we've been doing this whole year, just being locked up, cabin fever style.
That's right, yep.
Doesn't seem like there's an easy way. It just has a tribe. The 7-day trial.
Yeah, there was a free 30-day trial back when it started. I think like they had, you know, put in your code like quarantine or something like that, and you got like a free month of it to start. But I got like a 20% off or something. It was around 50, it was no more than $60 for the entire year. Money very well spent.
Yeah,
I have
watched that all the time.
Enjoyed so much. I'll tell you what. I look forward to Friday nights now, unlike anything I've experienced, like having like a weekly appointment. I haven't enjoyed looking forward to a specific day like this probably since like 2001, maybe 2002. No, seriously, like the early part of this century, it's how long it's been.
Just your excitement level is, it's just because it's something that's of quality.
Yeah, it's kind of like scheduled somewhat, like it's my, like, in my own head, I make it like scheduled TV watching, like the old days. But
yeah.
In this case, like I started watching that Joe Bob Briggs show, and when that was over, I kind of just kept making sure that I would put something on like Friday nights, and it's an absolute joy.
It's TGIF, but
mm-hmm.
F is for
fear.
Fright.
Freaks.
Well, there was a movie. One of the early ones that I watched was Bloodsucking Freaks. Paul, you've told me repeatedly, I gotta watch that Cannibal Holocaust movie.
Yeah.
It's not real good. But it's
right.
Infamous, right?
It is infamous. And
there's
a lot of just general movies in general that aren't good that are on like best movies of all time lists that I think,
yep,
as someone as
it's, a, it's
as
on
a
best
movie,
movie
fan, I should watch.
Is that on a best movie list?
Yeah. Because
wow.
It's one of those things where like back then no one had seen that. Like it
yeah,
was
yeah.
That kind
right,
of
right, it's the
like,
first
gore
found
was
footage
groundbreaking for.
Yeah. Well, apparently the director of Cannibal Holocaust, because I guess it was like filmed in Italy or something, or he had like an Italian crew, some kind of Italian connection. They thought it was real.
Yeah.
So they
like had
put
to
him
go
on
trial.
Yeah. For murder.
Yeah. And
oh,
he
wow.
had to bring out the people that died in the movie to
right.
be like, no, they're alive. No bodies, no crime.
Right.
Wow. That's
so,
crazy.
Yeah. But I wanted to tell you, Bloodsucking Freaks, kind of another movie sort of like that in the sense that it's just like so outrageous that it's probably worth a watch. I found that a lot more entertaining than Cannibal Holocaust. Wrestler Chris Jericho helped present that movie on the Joe Bob Briggs Last Drive-In show, and it was kind of a lot of fun listening to like them talk. So if you do sign up for Shudder, I would recommend maybe checking that one out. Here's the crappy thing, though. That Joe Bob Briggs Last Drive-In show, it's a double feature. But as you know, streaming services, movies come in, movies go out. So they don't always have all the episodes of that show because those movies that they show are movies that are on the cycle. So I don't even know if like Bloodsucking Freaks or Cannibal Holocaust are still available, both of which were on the Last Drive-In show, but usually watching it within that context, within that show, and getting all the extra like goody information in between kills is a more satisfying watch, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't know if I have the time to dedicate to the whole Joe Bob Briggs episode, but
I'm a busy guy. I got places to go.
Matt, I watch so many.
He just
things.
Said he wasn't Italian.
I watch so much stuff. But are the
hey,
Joe
I
Bob,
watch so much stuff.
I can't do an Irish accent, so I can't be like, what does an Irish guy say when he watches so many things?
There's probably R trills that I can't do in there.
I watch so many things, laddie.
I won't dare do it. There you go. Are the Joe Bob Briggs episodes streamable?
They are, yeah. So they show them. I don't know if it's live or filmed. I feel like it's live because there's like Twitter interactions in between, you know, during the breaks. And so that leads me to believe that it's actually a live airing, which I think is super cool because there's not much in the way of TV that's actually live that doesn't suck. Then the next day it's available to stream it. So if you fall asleep, Ian, like I've been known to do on Friday night, because it starts at 9, and to get through each movie, it's like 2.5 hours because of the extra breaks, right? The quote commercial breaks. So like the whole thing isn't over until like 2 a.m. It's a long night.
It is a long night. And that's more of what I mean. Like I don't have time for all of that because it's they're long episodes. And I know they're long episodes. It's not like I don't have time for an hour long Joe Bob episode. But yeah, if they're pushing like 2.5 hours, I'm like, man, ooh. And I'll break it up, hour on the treadmill, you know, hour at lunch or whatever. But yeah, it's still a long investment for like one episode or something.
So yeah, for me, Shudder, huge revelation. It's really made shuddering in place. Much easier to do.
Ian, would you like to go bring some positivity?
Sure.
Back into 2020?
Yeah, sure. My pick for 2020, or one of my picks, something that kind of surprised me. I think we probably took a big dump on it at the beginning of the year. It's the Doom Patrol TV show. It got released on HBO Max whenever that started up, and it originally was on DC Universe on the app.
Because it was originally just on the DC Universe app.
Yeah. And then whenever HBO Max debut, they put some of that content on there. And I know that we beat up the Robot Man costume pretty good. And we thought that it looked kind of cheesy because we saw some of the outtakes and things like that. I thought it was a really, really cool show. The Robot Man stuff looked better on film than what it was. They pull off, I'm a fan of Doom Patrol, the Grant Morrison stuff, as well as the Gerard Way later restarted Young Animal stuff. So they pulled a bunch of different storylines from all of those, and even some of the stuff from the, I think, is 1970s. There's some Doom Patrol stuff.
Yeah, I don't think I ever read the Morrison stuff, but I loved the like mid-2000s Keith Giffen run and the Gerard Way stuff.
Yeah. So it just surprised me about how quality that show is. It looks way better and is better acted than anything than I thought it was going to be. And it's way weirder than I could have ever imagined. They go inside a donkey's asshole for an entire episode.
Well, I mean,
it's all kinds of crazy.
They go inside the donkey. It's not necessarily, they don't go in the asshole.
They come out, though, don't they? They come out the donkey's asshole?
I don't know if he shits them out or just pukes them out, but regardless. Or if the
There's a lot of donkey play.
The donkey explodes, and they're just
right,
all
that's out. That's right. I knew it was some kind of donkey mania.
There is a lot of hot donk action. but yeah, that show is so fucking good. I'm not through the first season yet, but man, it is really fucking good. Like the character development, and I have never liked Cyborg so much.
Yeah, like, the kid that they have play Cyborg, and
Jovian Wade,
he's good, but they also give a lot of character to him, and they go into his personal life. And what it would be in the second season, they go into what it would be like if Cyborg had to date somebody and the kind of issues that he would have, that because he's a robot and he's a cyborg that he records everything. And the woman that he's dating is like, you got to turn all that stuff off. And it's just interesting that they get a little bit deeper with him than all the surface level stuff that you've seen in, you know, fucking Go Teen Titans or any of the other things that
yeah,
I've seen Cyborg in.
Through, I mean, like, he'll always be a Teen Titans character to me. And, you know, they've pushed him into being a Justice League guy. And I get it. He's tech guy. He's black. You know, it makes sense to diversify this traditionally all-white team in, you know, the modern era. But I just never was, I was just never interested in the character.
Yeah.
Like, I've never been, like, a tech guy. Like, I'm not interested in, like, tech heroes. Like, I just don't. I don't really care, but I think his juxtaposition in the show with, like, him being the tech guy with, you know, Rita and Larry and Cliff and even Jane, and you don't really know how any of their powers work.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you maybe know how Cliff works because he's, you know, a robot, your brain, you know, brain connected to a robot, but everything else is, like, Rita's struggling with it the whole time. Larry has no idea what this being is inside him.
Mm-hmm.
And Jane has no control over the, what, like, 64 different personalities. So it's, I think he works so well being the guy that's adjacent to the Justice League. He presumably knows the Justice League. They exist in this world.
And they talk about Cyborg as, Cyborg is famous in this world. So him hanging out with these miscreants from the Doom Patrol is a big deal. I'm a big Timothy Dalton fan from
Penny Dreadful.
Penny Dreadful. He's the chief. He's like a twisted Professor X. And Matt Ballmer as Larry Traynor, who's a guy that gets in this horrible plane accident and gets this being absorbed into him. Really, really tragic backstory. He's wrestling with his sexuality back in the 1950s, and they do a lot of flashback to that, and I always liked him and Matt Bomer in what was it? Was it? Is it Suits? Is that
no?
White collar. Yeah. I knew I was going to mess
he was
that
in
up.
The I think the third season of The Sinner, also on USA, and was really good and really creepy.
Yeah. Really good
but
actor.
Yeah, Matt Bomer's really good. Like, the cast is good. Like, the story's good.
Brendan Fraser is good, even as just, like, voice actor. And then when they do the flashbacks to him as this, you know, drunken race car driver in the 1980s.
I always think that if I was big Hollywood super stud in, like, 96 when The Mummy came out, that I wouldn't let myself go so much. But I know myself, and I don't know. I think I'd probably just be like, meh, I'll just be fat character actor from here on out.
You'd have unlimited Taco Bell.
Oh, my God. I'd be doing commercials if they would have me, which by this point, I would be overweight, and they probably wouldn't want me as their sponsor.
So Doom Patrol on HBO Max, really, really good show. Surprised the heck out of me about how quality it was, how weird it. That's the thing that always jumps out to me. It's just a really weird show, and I like it for its strangeness.
It's so bizarre, and I kind of equate it to Umbrella Academy, which is also very weird, but Doom Patrol really pushes everything weirder and a lot stranger, and like making certain aspects of characters and ideas understandable without getting into the science of why this is this. I feel like if you try to do a movie about Danny the Street, studio heads wouldn't even go near it.
Yeah, Danny the Street is a sentient street.
Yeah, no one would get it. No one would get it, but Doom Patrol's able to go out there and it's like, it's a sentient street. You either get it or you don't. Like, keep watching or don't keep watching. This is what we're doing.
Oh, and one last thing that I want to talk. Alan Tudyk in as Mr. Nobody, as the main antagonist, is really good. I like him in everything that I've ever seen him in.
I do too.
But it's the I know this is not for everybody, the fourth wall breaking, but the way that they do it, in the way that he does it in this show, I think is really funny.
I love it. They've been doing it a lot on this current season of Big Mouth, and I fucking love it. And I'm not through Big Mouth yet. I think I'm on like episode 4 or 5. But I'm like, man, I think this breaking the fourth wall stuff is so fucking funny. And I don't know if I'm a break the fourth wall guy or if I'm
am.
These shows are doing it so well. I fucking love it.
I always like break the fourth wall stuff. My wife, that is a instant no-go. If the fourth wall is broken, she is totally out. She can't deal with it. She hates it. She will not watch a show if somebody breaks the fourth wall. She's done.
Sometimes it's done very effectively if it's done minimally. So, for example, one of the last things that I saw that did it was in A Christmas Story. And when Ralphie pulls one over on his mom and pretends that the icicle hit him.
Yeah, yeah.
And he looks
and
he just kind of smiles at the camera. It's like, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Does your wife have a problem with that?
No, I'm sure she's probably asleep by that time every year. My wife also cannot stay awake for the last 10 minutes of any show or movie, to the point where I have to rewind shows and movies constantly just so she can watch the last 15 minutes. I've rewound a show and like, all right, hey, babe, this is the last, like, this is the final episode of the baking show that so you can find out who wins the baking championship. Wake up. Okay, I'm awake. And has fallen right back asleep. So.
Yeah.
That's one of the worst things of 2020.
Is the constant narcolepsy.
Yes, narcolepsy is
bad.
While we wait for Paul to return, would you like to... I'll serve it back to you. Would you like to go with another thing that was great in 2020?
Maybe I can get like three things that I really liked because Paul won't know.
Shove them in there. Go. Lightning round.
Wait. I'm sorry. I got to look at my list.
God damn it.
I know. I had a few things on my list, Ian, and I wasn't...
Any of those video game systems?
Yeah,
While isn't here.
I kind of didn't want to talk about it because it's sort of too easy or too uninteresting, but... Xbox Series X is pretty fucking cool.
Okay.
I've revisited... a pretty extensive back catalog of games as a result. Kind of makes you realize that it's not just about like all the new games going forward. There's like, I think we've hit that point where you can go back pretty far and the games are really still very playable.
Yeah. So. For Christmas, I got the Mario 3D, like three pack.
Oh, the three. Yeah. Those are all good games, dude.
And I started playing Mario Sunshine again. And can't say that I'm having a good time because it's taken a lot of time to like coordinate and get down the water cannon blaster.
Too much dexterity required.
Yeah, maybe I've lost a step or something like that.
You have.
Absolutely. But I've been playing that. Super Mario Galaxy is on that disc as well.
So you got Sunshine, Galaxy, and
64.
And 64.
Yeah, so I started playing Sunshine. I remember Galaxy is one of my favorites. I really love that.
Which one? Galaxies is the newest of them, right?
There's Galaxy, there's Galaxy 2, and then there's, I think that there's another one.
I meant
one
of
also.
The three on the... On
yeah,
the...
Galaxy is the newest one. I think it came out in 2009 or something like that. So it came out for the Wii, and I remember playing that a whole lot.
The regular Wii.
Yes.
Came out on regular Wii.
Yeah. So, I don't know if that's a best of. It's just a tag on to your
game. I didn't play any good new games this year. I went back and played a bunch of Halos. Wow, are those good.
I played Madden this year. It was fun.
Sure it was.
It was. Paul, why don't you go?
The makers of Madden should all be replaced. And I mean that sincerely. They're horrible. Give me a good football game, Paul. That's my hope for 2021.
A good football game.
Wouldn't that be neat?
Do you want me to talk about a good football game?
No, you talk about one of your 2020 highlights.
Well, I'm going to go a little off the board. And probably the thing I loved most about 2020 was the restart of the NHL playoffs that also coincided with the baseball playoffs and the basketball season, because at any point from like 11 a.m. until you went to bed, there was some sporting event on. Like, I got to watch like hockey all day, like baseball in between, like basketball at night. Like, I watched, it was so fucking awesome getting like nonstop sports all day, every day. You know, I think, you know, late March, the NHL called the season off for COVID. And, you know, then they took a while to get the return to play going. I think they started August 1st. So, like, August 1st through late October, I think maybe mid-October, the Stanley Cup was awarded. But, man, it was those few months of just nonstop sports were great. And now it's kind of been almost back to normal. You know, NBA started up again, and, you know, football hasn't missed a beat. But, like, I've always said that, like, my favorite time of year, well, not my favorite time of year because I hate the cold weather still, but I love the first round of NHL playoffs because you get 16 teams all playing, like, you get, like, 3 games a day for, like, 2 weeks, and it's just nonstop hockey. But this was like that for 2 months.
Yeah, I kind of like that. I like that time of the year as well. For the NBA mainly, I don't watch as much NHL, but I get my Penguin games in there, and then I also get to watch their basketball games until 2 a.m. Yeah. if I'm brave enough to stay up so late.
West Coast games.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a great time of the year. And this year I remember having to make a choice between, do I watch an NBA finals game or do I watch Sunday Night Football? Or if can I flip in between, like, I think the World Series was also on at that time. A lot of fun to pack all those games in there. And I thought for what my money is worth, the NBA basketball was it was fantastic. It was really, really good. The bubble basketball was awesome this year.
Yeah.
I almost immediately forgot that there were no crowds or anything like that. Just the level of play was really elevated. I think it had something to do with them just being familiar with you're coming to the same court. All you're doing is live, sleep, eat basketball because they were in a bubble. They couldn't do anything else. So it was really good basketball.
Yeah, that's how a lot of the hockey players approached it, because they're all home teams at that point. You know, early on it was 2 different bubbles, and then they all, you know, converged in Edmonton for the final. But everyone was just in the same routine, and once you get those athletes out on the court, out on the ice, like, they just play. Like, it doesn't matter who's there, like, you just play. And, you know, some players talked about, you know, it was weird that there was no crowd, but as a viewer, especially from the NHL standpoint, we've been so used to seeing Stadium Series and Winter Classic games the last few years where the ice is so far away from the crowd anyway that when you're looking at the ice, like, you don't see the crowd. So they had the lower bowl of the 2 stadiums all blocked off. You know, they had big graphic tarps with, you know, a couple logos on them. So it was sort of just like watching a Winter Classic game from ice level. Like, it didn't bother me whatsoever. Like, I missed nothing by not having fans at those NHL games.
The NBA games had big video boards all along and all behind, and they did something that was cool where you could go and I forget how they ran the lottery for you could like Skype in and you could see yourself on there. Sometimes they would have celebrities sitting in the stands, and they had it blown up big enough that it didn't look crazy, but you could tell and you could see the different fans sitting in the stands. It gave a vibe that there was somebody there or somebody watching, or it was a little surreal, but it didn't pull you out of the game.
Yeah. A neat little touch that I really loved about the Stanley Cup final was that since there were no fans, they dedicated part of the middle first balcony to the Stanley Cup. So, like, they cleared out an area, they put a table up, and they just set the Stanley Cup on it while Dallas and Tampa were playing. Like, so while they're playing for the trophy, like, at any point they can look up and see it up there.
Yeah, that's
I thought that was fucking awesome.
That should be, they should do that going forward no matter what.
Yeah, like, they did they did such a great job with how the entire game presentation was. Like, I loved it. I thought it was great. Baseball's was fine. Like, I didn't miss a beat with baseball's lift.
Baseball felt
the cardboard
the
statues were a little weird.
Yeah.
The Pirates performed well though, right?
I think they always do. Don't they always like win, right? No?
I don't know.
Well, they still exist?
I know, Ian, that they're a historically bad franchise.
Are they?
But I believe this year in particular, they were legendarily bad.
I'm so proud. Makes me so proud.
Yeah, they really stunk up the joint. But it was nice, even in a COVID asterisk year, that the Dodgers finally won a World Series after going 3 years in a row.
Would you give these champions an asterisk? Because I would not, because I think that it actually was harder this year.
I don't think I would either. I think it's just a different set of circumstances that you're playing under. Like, who knows what happens to your team during a season? Like, I can't think of any examples off the top of my head, but like the year the Penguins lost, you know, Mario Lemieux for like half the season to cancer, and then he comes back and he enters playoffs. Like, do you get an asterisk that year because you had a player that was going to shatter the single season point record and then you lost them? Like, so, like, I mean, that's a pretty big event.
Yeah.
It's not shortened season COVID, but it's just a different, like, it's just a different style of what teams have to deal with.
And the Lakers had a, the Lakers were eventual champion.
Yeah.
They had a player, Avery Bradley, who was one of their shutdown perimeter defenders, whose son has really bad asthma and respiratory problems. And he said, I'm not chancing it. I'm not going in the bubble. I'm out. And so they just lost this guy that they normally would have that they really depended on. And they had to figure out a way around it. So that's, you know, another hurdle that they had to jump over outside of just being locked in a bubble, you know, with limited access to their family and friends.
And when you break it down, like all the teams that played through this year all had to play through the same conditions, through, you know, the same no fan experience, the same bubble experiences. Like, it wasn't like any team had a different road than anyone else, mm-hmm. other than, you know, that guy leaving, other than the Bruins goalie, you know, opting out after
that's
the first
crazy.
Round.
He, like, he played.
Yeah.
And then he like, just was like, I'm done.
Yeah, there's stuff like that. But, I mean, is it a lot different than if he gets hurt?
Yeah, that's kind of what I think. You just have to roll with it. It's like a weird injury almost.
Right.
I mean,
I think if you cheat to win the World Series, you get an asterisk.
Absolutely. I think that the Astros
deflate footballs, you get an asterisk.
Absolutely. Or if you spy on teams for 20 plus years, then your entire dynasty is invalid, probably. And no one should make it into the Hall of Fame, I would say. I mean, I'm just spitballing here.
I love just the constant barrage of sports throughout the fall. It was, I was in the waning days of my, how long I could lay in the pool out back. Like, you know, I was losing my tan by that point.
The sun was setting on your tan and on
sports. It was definitely time to come inside and, you know, just really, really appreciate this tan indoors. So it got me through the later part of the year. Matt, do you have another positive thing about 2020?
You know what? It's the lowest of low hanging fruit, but I think I have to bring it up. I think the single coolest, most exciting moment was at the very end of the year when we got the return of Luke Skywalker, the real return of Luke Skywalker. And it's really conjured up a lot of different thoughts and feelings, in me over that time period. It's that 5 minutes alone has that we got in The Mandalorian. Sorry if you haven't seen it yet, folks. It's really colored my opinion of the sequel movies in a not very positive way. You know, I was always, and I still am to a degree, a little bit lukewarm on the, you like that? On the sequel movies, able to find some of the merits in them, because I think there are, in all three of them, there's cool parts.
Yeah, I agree.
But that's not nearly good enough. And I think we can unanimously say the best of the three was the first one, The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
It was a good setup, and then they went horribly, horribly awry in the second one.
We're just counting the saga movies. We're not counting Solo or Rogue One.
Next positive moment of 2020 was the return of Luke Skywalker.
And now I'm talking negatively about the sequel trilogy, but what it did, Ian, is it
because we like to raise a boat and lower all the others.
Yeah. What it did,
raise a boat, so sink the armada.
My personal, as far as like entertainment goes, my personal highlight of the year was the return of Luke Skywalker, and it conjured feelings in me, frankly, I didn't know existed. It was the most emotional I've ever been watching any Star Wars ever in my life. It was something very special, but I couldn't help reflect on the other newer Star Wars stuff that we got. And I'm still reflecting on it as a result of that, because it's like, if they could have somehow matched that, then I would feel very differently about the sequel movies. And the fact that they didn't even come close to it just pisses me off all the more. And I've heard this, you know, argument ever since the prequels. It's just a movie. It's not going to change your life. It's not going to make you feel like you're 6 years old again. Well, there's proof that, no, this stuff can make you feel like you're six again.
The trailer to The Force Awakens made me feel like I was 6 years old. Like, I, even thinking in the trailer for The Phantom Menace made me feel that way, too. Now, those are trailers and, you know, whatever. But even today, if I watch those trailers, I think there's going to be something that stirs in me.
Yeah, there's
makes me feel like,
there's
holy
two parts.
Shit, I love Star Wars.
There's two parts in the Force Awakens trailer that I still remember. It was the first time we see the back of Kylo Ren,
which isn't even in the fucking movie.
Which isn't even in the movie. But like, and I thought he was such a cooler character than he ended up being.
I know.
He was like, because it was only his back, but the way he was walking, he was almost like kind of like big, heavy, powerful steps that you're just like, who the fuck is this guy? And then he lights that lightsaber with such a cool stance.
His lightsaber's all fucked up looking.
Right. Never explained why it was like that ever. But like here we're thinking, oh, it looks imperfect. Like it's really ancient. Oh my God, this is like some ancient villain from like centuries before the Clone Wars who returned.
God damn it.
And no, we got just a big nose kid.
It's that guy
was
from
really
Marriage
angry.
Story who got real mad.
And then, you know, you compare, you can't help but compare Rey to Luke and, you know, having the return of your hero, and you compare it to the hero that they try to jam down your throat. It makes you like angry and bitter. It's like, ah, and I've been constantly searching for the answer. Like what is the, how can you reconcile these movies? How, like, the return of Luke to me proved that Star Wars isn't dead, but the furthest we've gotten in the timeline is the Rise of Skywalker, which is the most depressing, dour, horrible ending ever. The Rise of Skywalker, all the Skywalkers are dead. And the Rise of Palpatine is really what it is. How is that a happy ending? How do you go from what you had as the perfect ending in Return of the Jedi to, no. Han's dead, Leia's dead, Luke's dead, Luke's nephew is dead. Everybody's dead. And the villain's granddaughter is now the hero. Like, no, just no. I do not accept that. So I'm like thinking, well, is there a way, is there some kind of edit they can do? Like a really big edit?
No.
To make them. They'd have to continue the movies with Rey.
No.
And they'd have to do a better job, I think.
No, you just fuck those movies. Do what they did to the prequels for a few years. Pretend they don't exist. and just do Luke a year after The Mandalorian and then do three movies in that timeline.
I don't know, dude. There's kind of a lot of references to the prequels lately. I feel like the prequels have aged well in the overall opinion and view of a lot of Star Wars fans. It's the sequels that just are not being accepted. And frankly, I don't think they ever will be. So I don't know. Disney has a weird issue that they have to solve because they put all their eggs in that basket. And it's a rotten basket full of rotten eggs.
I mean, they didn't put all their eggs in that basket because we're talking about The Mandalorian right now.
Yeah, I know, so but like...
they have diversity in their baskets. They have one big basket and a little basket, and they put some eggs in that one. Oh, it's a Luke egg.
No,
but,
I hear
after the Disney announcement, now all of the eggs are in the little basket.
Right, all of them are in the little basket.
I feel like there are a bunch of little baskets.
Look at all these shows.
Yeah, but I feel like they're all going to kind of... I mean, it's all Star Wars TV. Mm-hmm. Which is really funny because they did announce a couple movies. Those are like the things I'm the least interested in, and I'm the movie guy. Like, I don't know. We'll see. But it was very cool to see my favorite hero come back. Very, very cool. Even though he was a video game character, he had a video game face.
I love one meme Luke Skywalker where it's like, it's from some like Star Wars like role-playing game from the 1990s.
In the 90s.
It just cracks me
I mean, up. Yeah, it looks fucked up. I know.
It didn't matter the first time I watched it because I was watching it through tears.
Yeah,
so
right. Everything
I
was blurry.
Tell. Yeah, exactly. I was like, is it Luke? Is it deepfake? Is it Sebastian Stan? I don't know what it is. Like,
you're right.
I can't stop crying to make it a clear picture. And, like, I mean, that probably helped with, like, make that moment just so crazy emotional for me. But, yeah, once I watched it again the next day, I was like, ooh.
And ever since then, there's this bizarre divide among, like, certain factions of fans. Like, one of the head of the Star Wars story group, Pablo Hidalgo, is out there making fun of certain people that are, like, shedding tears over the return of Luke, because I think he was kind of largely in the camp of like pro The Last Jedi and can't seem to come to terms with the fact that not only was it not well received at the time, the overall opinion is really shifting against it.
I mean, it's shifting against it. I feel like it's staying the same. Like,
no,
people are staunchly for it and people are staunchly
against it. It's shifting against it. Especially with the return of Luke Skywalker, the Luke Skywalker that we always wanted and the one that we always deserved, Ian. And there's a divide where, like, what in the world is a Lucasfilm employee, a high-ranking Lucasfilm employee, making fun of fans that loved what Lucasfilm just produced? What in the world are you doing? Like, that guy just needs to go. He just needs to, you know, in the age...
like us calling our fans nerds and dorks.
Paul, in the age of cancel culture, that's a guy that needs to get canceled.
Yeah, it's a really weird... I don't think you should be hating on anyone if you work for Star Wars. If you work for Star Wars, you need to suck it up and accept everybody.
Just ignore it.
With,
right.
You know.
But it's like, but it's not like somebody was out there saying, like, you know, this was terrible. I hate everything that Lucasfilm just did. Like, they loved it. I loved it so much. There's tears of joy running down my face and snot coming out of my nose.
That's the big difference between not just Luke coming back in The Mandalorian, but The Mandalorian is that there's no... like, there's no divide. Like, if The Last Jedi was as good as people keep saying it was, should there be this big of a divide? Should it have had this impact on Star Wars fandom?
I went down the rabbit hole with all this crap ever since Luke returned, and I found...
Are you cutting me off and dismissing my thoughts?
No, I'm backing it up. or I'm going to try to supplement it. There was an interview, like an older interview, based on how dumb Ryan Johnson's haircut was. I'm going to say it was 5 years before maybe he made The Last Jedi. All right. So like not like that far. It wasn't when he was still a film student. He was making movies or whatever. But there's this interview.
He had made Looper, right?
Right. Yeah, it was probably around the Looper era. And he's got this, whatever, not a good haircut. And he is saying, I feel like
the mark of a bad director.
I feel like I haven't done my job if everybody leaves the movie and they're like, and if everybody's like, oh my God, that was the most amazing thing. I want people to have discussions after it. I want half of the audience to love it, and I want half of the audience to hate it. And I thought, well, you didn't really achieve that because I would say 2/3 hated it and only a third loved it.
Does he hate Knives Out because everyone loved that?
I thought that movie was crap.
Did you? I like Knives Out.
I did.
I thought Knives Out was cool.
I thought it was pretty boring. I thought it was pretty good, but it's another example. I can't stand his style. Like, he is so hell-bent on trying to prove he's the smartest fucking guy in the room, I think. You ever read, like, certain comic book writers, and you're just like, shut up.
Yeah, Neil Gaiman.
Right. Or Grant Morrison or something. It's like,
or
dude,
more
understand your medium.
More accurately, Tom King.
Yeah, yeah. He's like Tom King. That's a really good comparison. And he's more interested in trying to, I know we've beaten it to death, subvert the expectations, but he's so hell-bent on proving that he's like one step ahead of everybody else. Like, get over yourself, man. Like, Star Wars is for everybody. It was never just for you, and you treated it like it was just for you.
I agree.
So Luke Skywalker returning. All positivity.
Well, yeah, it's conjured up a few negative thoughts here and there.
This
but
hate tree that was birthed out of Luke's return. That was rebirthed.
That's right.
I love a hate tree. So, Matt, you got two things. Paul, did you get your two things in? You got sports return and
I didn't get two things in. It was like we were talking before the mics were on about how like my memory is just deteriorating at a rapid level.
All the McSauce crew in some way, shape or form are falling apart in 2020, be it mentally, physically.
Yeah.
And emotionally,
like, I think
Star Wars-ly.
I think part of the problem for me this year is that I watched so many things. Like I've been blazing through TV shows and movies. I watched all the Tarantino movies. I just watched all the Mission Impossibles. Look for that on PR coming up soon.
Mission Impossible.
I watched a ton of like TV series. I finished the David Tennant Doctor Who stuff. I watched the Good Omens series. I watched the first season of American Gods. Like I've watched so many things. Tons of horror movies. I watched The Lodge. I loved it. I went back and watched some old 80s movies like Videodrome, which was oddly cool, but really weird. That like I feel like I took in so much stuff that I don't have one or two things that are like, oh my God, this was really good. I did love Doom Patrol. I do love Doom Patrol. I'm not done with it yet. I loved Umbrella Academy season 2. Want to shout for that. But I really loved the book The Outsider by Stephen King. I watched the HBO series early this year, when I think it premiered in January last year.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of,
I think we have a PR episode on that one.
Yeah, it was kind of drawn out a little bit. They had to pad some of the story in order to like get the right number of episodes for HBO or whatever, but man, the book is really tight.
What streaming service was it on?
It was on HBO, so it should be on HBO Max now. Okay. But the book is so good. It cuts all the chaff. It's nothing but the goods, like this tight, streamlined story, start to finish. And, man, I really, really fucking loved that book. And, like, I don't know if there's, like, pre-car accident Stephen King, and then there's, like, post, and this is, like, the new Stephen King. renaissance, but I've heard like the 12/11/93, the JFK book, that's supposed to be really good. Mr. Mercedes is supposed to be really good. Like,
I read
there's
that.
A lot of newer Stephen King that like people really like, but man, I blazed through The Outsider.
Did you know that Mr. Mercedes was a series? They made a series out of it.
I did. I haven't watched it.
What was that on, like TNT or something?
Maybe.
I think it was on TNT.
It looked like I saw the trailer for it, and I watched the trailer. I was like, "Oh, cool! When's that come out?" It's like, "Yeah, 3 years ago." I was like, "Oh shit!" I had
that
no idea.
That doesn't mean that it's bad.
No. It doesn't mean it's bad at all. I was just like really surprised.
Yeah.
And I will tell you, it based on the tone of the way it looked in the trailer, because when I read the book, I didn't read it that creepy. Like, but it looks like they made it a little bit creepier on the show, which I really liked. But the book was pretty good. But
did you read that this year?
No, I read it like 5 years ago.
Did you watch the show this year?
No, didn't. I never watched the show. Oh. I would like to, but I don't know how I'm going to do it.
I think it's probably Hulu. I think Mr. Mercedes is Hulu or something. I think the JFK story is Hulu.
Also Hulu, yeah.
And like I don't have Hulu. I had it. I didn't really like it, so
there's a lot of good stuff on Hulu. A Teacher is on Hulu. That's
That's Kate Mara and Nick Robinson, but that's also on
FX.
It's on FX, so like, yeah. I feel like I can watch that through Comcast. I don't need Hulu for it.
Yeah. Show Pen 15, a comedy show about these two girls in middle school. And the girls are, you know, they're 30-year-old women comedians.
The girls are played by adults.
Yes. And everybody else in the show is their children. So it doesn't
that actually
really
sounds pretty funny.
It took me two seasons to realize that Pen 15, it really is just penis, but like it's a really, really funny show, recommended by a friend of the show, Ryan McCormick. Great show, and
that's on Hulu.
That's on Hulu. So
we
honestly, that would be if you wanted to get a free like 7-day trial, do that and watch Pen 15.
We talked before we started recording about how, I wouldn't actually like Curb Your Enthusiasm. I think you guys laid it out pretty clear why I wouldn't like it. Would I like Pen 15?
I think you would. They're not despicable characters. Like, they're very likable characters. Yeah. It's very much in the style of Big Mouth. Those two actresses voice characters on the third season or fourth season of Big Mouth, whatever the newest season is.
Cafeteria Girls?
Yeah, the Cafeteria Girls are the Pen 15 girls.
Do you guys think I would like Arrested Development?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you don't like the because Pen 15, it's still a straightforward comedy.
Yeah.
And Arrested Development is a straightforward, tightly written, like expertly written comedy. You would love all the callbacks, especially if you watched it streaming. You would get and love all of the callbacks.
So
Curb Your Enthusiasm is almost all improv. It's so loose. And the characters are unlikable.
I watched all of Arrested Development except the last season because it won't load in my Netflix profile. Hmm. I know there's
like
a fourth
a
season,
problem.
But it doesn't come up. The last season I watched was the the Cinco de Mayo season,
mm-hmm.
where everything's broken up between characters. But there's one after that.
Yeah.
That. It's never strange. Available through my Netflix account.
That's strange. I'll go one. I'm the last one here. I'll do one last thing. I did mention Pen 15. Another thing, like real quick, that I wanted to mention two other shows, and then I'll do my last one. Industry was a really good show on HBO Max. These are ones that I'm doing lightning round on because
what's Industry?
Industry is about finance, like young graduate students that go into finance in Britain, and it's about like
so it's
their
a drama.
So it's a drama.
Is it like Billions?
I guess sort of
or
like
Succession.
It's more like Succession.
So and, boring.
Yeah, that's why I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, but Industry would be something that I would recommend. There's another show called...
Just Not to You.
Yeah, Normal People is another show that you would probably like, Paul, and it is about two Irish people that fall in love, and I know that sounds super boring. It's really, really emotional, and Paul, I think you would like that, so check out Normal People. I think that's on... Shit, that might be on Hulu. I'll have to check out what it's on.
Uh-oh. But sounds like someone's giving me their password.
Maybe. But the but the real last thing that I wanted to talk about, which is definitely
Steelers playoffs 2020.
My favorite thing. No, it's close. It's sports related. The Last Dance documentary miniseries about the final season that Michael Jordan had with the 90s Bulls. I love sports. I loved the 90s Bulls. I love a documentary. I love a long, drawn-out documentary. And I fucking love Michael Jordan. And not just, like, the nicey-nice 1990s Gatorade be-like-Mike Michael Jordan. I like real-ass Michael Jordan. Though, in this documentary, I heard Michael Jordan say fuck more than I've heard myself say fuck. That's all he did was sit there with a mysteriously always going down cognac and a cigar and just talking mad shit on his opponents, on his teammates, on situations. Like, and it made him so fucking real, and all the crazy mania that somebody that is that good and reaches those levels of professionalism has to be that crazy. It was great. And then you also see the flip side where they talk to Scottie Pippen and you see all the ups and downs of his career and how he failed in a bunch of big moments, but he was always there for Jordan, and how hard his life was and how nice Scottie Pippen is and all the things that happened to him and the crazy stuff.
I thought you were going to turn that and say how nice Jordan also was to Scottie Pippen when he failed. But it doesn't sound like that. It sounds like Michael Jordan is just a terrible person all of the time.
No, he's just driven. And it's interesting to see somebody that is so psychotically driven and can make up adversaries where there are none. And there's a portion where it was some random ass in 1992, there was some hot rookie for the Washington Bullets, and it was like a back-to-back game where they were, for some reason, they were playing two games against the Washington Bullets, and there was some rookie that came out and scored, I don't know, 28 points on Michael Jordan in this game, and had, it was his career best, and I can't even remember this dude's name. And at the end of the game, Jordan said to somebody that the dude came up to him and said, like, good game or something. And then it's a famous meme. And he was like, and I took that personally. And he went out and scored the next quarter and scored the exact amount of points in the first quarter on that dude. And that dude hasn't been heard of since. And that kind of fucking insanity. And then they go and they're like, well, we heard, you know, like later that guy actually didn't say anything to you at all. He's like, yeah, he didn't, but you know, it's like, so you lied to yourself to make yourself that upset to like ruin this guy's career.
Did you watch The Last Dance, Matt?
No.
Oh my God. It's so fucking good.
I know it's one of the things that swept the nation in 2020, like Tiger King and Taylor Swift's Folklore. But I don't know if I have ESPN Plus portion of Disney Plus, but like it was I don't know, like I feel like I would be interested if I watched it, but I'm not really driven to watch it.
Much like Matt's Friday nights, this was Sunday night appointment viewing, 9 o'clock ESPN. I was watching The Last Dance. It consumed.
How many episodes?
I believe it was 10 episodes.
So it went for 10 weeks. You had to wait once a week.
There were two episodes a night, so I would watch
10 hour-long episodes?
Hour-long episodes, yeah. So you would get two episodes.
10 hours of Michael Jordan
a night.
Yeah, I mean,
for 5 weeks.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a
if you would watch a sporting event, right? Yeah.
And there were no sports.
And there were no, yeah, this, so, yeah, keep in mind, there were no sports. This, and that's probably why it also consumed the nation. They also moved it up because it was originally scheduled to air after the NBA finals were originally scheduled to play in June. But since there were no sports, ESPN moved it up, and the documentary actually wasn't done at that time. So I've listened to interviews with the filmmaker, who he was like, yeah, man, like, we were really rushing to get those last two episodes done because we were against the clock. We had to get this product out there. ESPN asked us if we could do it. We promised it, and we had to really hurry up and do it. It was just a really well-done documentary. I like documentaries.
Are there moments where they make it, where they show Michael Jackson? Are there moments where they show Michael Jordan not being a complete douchebag?
Yeah, absolutely.
Everything you hear about The Last Dance is, oh, Michael Jordan's a fucking sociopath. He's a horrible, horrible sociopath. Like, he's completely unlikable. And I'm like, well, so do I? Like, I don't care to watch that.
He's not unlikable.
That's why you're telling. No, I don't care how big his drive is if I don't like him.
He's not unlikable. It's the portrait of a real person, I think. And that's something that I appreciate, because you see so many things, especially now in 2021, every sports person has their persona massaged and written for them, or every one of their Instagram posts is perfectly framed. And while he had say on Last Cut, you could tell that there was some stuff that was left in there that didn't put him in a great light, but it made him feel real. And I don't think that you can feel that way. Do you feel like you know Sidney Crosby?
No, not at all. I don't think you feel that way about any current professional athlete.
So the unvarnished look at Michael Jordan and everybody in this, because they interview most of the team. It is very
Lamar Jackson couldn't even tell people he went to take a shit a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, right?
Right.
Like, there's no shame in that. You went and took a shit, and then you came back and won the game. That's pretty cool, Lamar Jackson. I think that's the other thing. You get to see this real unique look at not only Michael Jordan, but everybody else on those epic Bulls teams. And you get to see the storytelling and the building of, because they go back and forth in time. And they start in the final season in 1998, and they start going through that season. But they travel back throughout Bulls history to show you this is all the things, all the foundational building steps that led to this last season that ended, honestly, in the most dramatic way, with the final shot, Michael Jordan making the final shot to win the championship. That you could, it's like a script that was written.
Was it a 7-game series?
It was a 7-game series. It was game 6 that they won, but it was the last shot. You know, Jordan came down. In the final seconds, he stole the ball off of Karl Malone, who was the MVP. This was on the road. He took the ball down, dribbled it down to the final seconds. He was the only one that touched the ball for like that last probably minute of the game, and it's just epic storytelling, I think, on any level. And it makes it that much more special that it was real and we all saw it. And to see the behind-the-scenes stuff and the building blocks of it, I think was pretty special.
Cool. So when the documentary's over, all the Washington Bullets fans are left alone in a dark theater waiting for the next part, and it never happens?
yeah, he...
Or, I'm sorry, wait.
Washington
Wizards. He
played for the Wizards, yeah.
Because who are the Bullets? You weren't allowed to be called Bullets then.
The Bullets were the team that is now the Washington Wizards changed their name. They were the Bullets, and then too much murder happened, and they had to change their name in the late 90s.
Thank you, The Wire.
Yes.
It happened in the late 90s?
The late 90s, yeah. I think the first Wizard season was maybe 97, 98, somewhere around there.
Okay. All right. One last thing, real quick, speaking of documentaries. I don't like documentaries, but I love Down to Earth with Zac Efron on Netflix.
Is it a documentary?
It is. He goes to like a bunch of different places around the world learning about just essentially like how to save the planet by, you know, mining, you know, water and gas and nature in different ways and just kind of saving the planet. And normally I don't fucking give a shit.
No, because you're in love with Zac Efron.
Yeah, but you love a handsome man.
But man, do I love Zac Efron.
Jesus Christ.
And he's so funny and personable. You wouldn't expect it from such a handsome man. But I loved it. I loved it. Great documentary. And I don't watch documentaries.
So you don't know what a great documentary is.
Yeah, I don't respect this.
If you don't watch documentaries.
Well, I mean that was great to me. So that was a great documentary. Like, but yeah, I don't watch documentaries. Documentaries are fucking boring.
Unless they have Zac Efron
in it, and then how dreamy.
That's gonna do it for us tonight. Thank you for taking this 2020 positivity walk with us. My name is Paul McGinty.
Ian Sharpley.
Max Sal.
We'll see you next time.